Test, test. This is Dave Crippen of the Edsel B. Ford Design History Center of the Edison Institute in Durban, Michigan. And today is May 20th, 1986, and we're in beautiful Newbury Park, California. And we are just west of the sprawling, lovely, sprawling community of Thousand Oaks, which I'm seeing for the first time. And we are interviewing today Mr. Henry G. Haga, H-A-G-A, who is currently director of the Advanced Concept Center in Newbury Park and has a long history of design history with General Motors. We are asking Mr. Haga to give us his career narrative at his own pace in his own words.
Thank you, Dave. Well, like most people, I was born January 22nd, 1931, in Milwaukee. Both of my parents immigrated from Norway, a little town outside of Bergen, and they ended up in Milwaukee. My father was brought over to this country by an uncle. He started his work here in Fargo, North Dakota, and I guess he sort of had to work himself out of bondage and learned a trade, mason work, bricklaying, and after 2 years he went back and married my mother, brought her back, and they settled in Milwaukee. When I was about 4 or 5 years old, my dad had a rough time making it in Milwaukee because the Depression was coming on and times are tough, so he sent my mother and I back to Norway, and I lived there for about 10 months. Met very many great recollections of Norway, the primitiveness of it because they lived on an island, and the facilities were out in the back, and I remember one day it was heavy snow and we had to tunnel through the snow to get to where we had to go with immediacy. And it's very rural. People tended the soil with hoes and picks because it's very rocky, but it's beautiful.
Have you been back there since?
I went back there with my family, my two boys, my wife, one winter when we were working at Opel, and that was another adventure because we crossed Norway in a blizzard, and the Opel people met us at the ferry, and they took the car and put it in the air and put 4 snow tires studded on it and gave us a survival kit, and we headed off. We found out as we got down the road that the road had been closed for 3 days. The tunnels were enclosed and they just let people out. The snow was so heavy that you had to drive down into the tunnel off the snow base. But that was another exciting thing. We met all our relatives. But when I left Norway, came back to Milwaukee, I couldn't speak any English. I remember they put me in St. Martini's Lutheran school, and there I was at that time practically Norwegian, trying to get along with the Americans, and it was an uphill battle. I always felt cheated because I never had kindergarten. I went right into first grade. And if I speak a little, if I speak a little strangely, it's because of this Norwegian background, I suppose. I've since forgotten all my Norwegian.
My sister was Norwegian.
Is she? Oh, great. After a period of time, my dad moved out west. We were out here in California. I think it was 1937, 1938 for a while. And a little while later, after about a year, we moved back again to Milwaukee. So Milwaukee is kind of my hometown. And I worked for my dad in Mason Construction for several summers. My dad was a pretty tough guy and could handle it. After about 3 summers in the hot pit, putting up block in basement after basement, I said, Dad, I think I want to do something else.
He says, stonemason work?
Yes, right. Well, what do you want to do? I said, I'm crazy about cars. So my dad was very silent and he kept putting mortar on the block and thinking about it. He said, how are you going to do that? I said, I don't know. But I'd been in touch with Brooks Stevens in Milwaukee.
Yes.
And when I had a spare time, some spare time, I'd drive down there, and I was about 16 at the time. And I would...
Where was he located?
He was downtown Milwaukee. I think it was, I don't know if it was State Street or someplace.
That's where the office was.
Yes, yeah. Right. And there's a man called Florio there who was very kind, and I showed him sketches and drawings.
Florio?
Yes.
F-L-O-R-I-O?
Yeah. And...
We'll probably ask you to spell.
Yes, okay. Now, I should go back a little further. My memory keeps triggering earlier events. I went to high school at Kashmir Pulaski High School.
Oh, yes.
A very modern school at that time. And all my buddies were of German descent. I was one Norwegian and a nest of Germans in basically Polish school, which meant that I had to fight a lot. Defense, you know.
Defend
yourself. And Polish people grow big and tough.
What year was that?
Well, I graduated in 1948 from Kashmir Pulaski.
So memories of World War II are still...
Oh, yes. All right.
Fresh,
right.
Among the Polish.
Yeah. And it was fun, but it was defensive. And I guess it was something God had willed, because my wife is of Polish descent, so this is a preparatory thing, I guess. She's rather delicate. She's not as tough as some of the fellows that I met at Kashmir Pulaski. But one day, it was a beautiful warm day, and we're waiting outside of Kashmir Pulaski to enter school, and two matched Beverly sedan cords pulled up. Yeah, there was Beverly sedan. It was a special sedan that they built. Yeah, and there were two, and they were match set. And out stepped one gentleman with a slight limp and some slides, and they were very nattily dressed. And these two cords, there's a long concrete entrance to the building. They parked right out front, so these cars were framed by the concrete and the road behind it, and they purred, you know, they had a nice little rumble to them. And I said, my God. Now, I'd been interested in hot rods and 36 Fords and 32s, deuces, and all that up until then. And it was kind of like an awakening. There's a whole new world of something that's exotic, something that has more personality than chug-a-chug-a-chug.
Right, yes.
And
a personal dedication.
Yes. And the cards are immaculate, and Brooks Stevens put on a presentation that day in the school auditorium on industrial design.
Fantastic.
And I didn't know what industrial design was, and I said, hey, this is something that's tangible, something that I can relate to, because I was up to here at that point with trigonometry and plane geometry and Latin.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't quite know what I was going to do, so I was going to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe as I look back now, it might have been a bit of escapism too, because here was something that I could feel good about, that I didn't have to go through the numbers to learn.
Right.
I felt I could assimilate into this industrial design thing. Anyway, ever since then, I made frequent trips down there. I didn't see Brooks Stevens, but I saw Florio.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you have a meeting that day?
No, I was in the background. I was just with awe, you know, mouth open.
There's a great industrial designer,
right,
yeah.
Right.
One of the 10 founders of the industrial sciences.
Yes. when I went to his office, I brought some sketches along for side views. They said, now you got to get around the vehicle, you got to draw it into perspective, you got to see what's happening around the vehicle. So I draw my 48, I should say, customized Ford, Mercury 36 Ford, lowered with skirts and flipper discs and all that, in perspective. And I think now of how he received me, he nodded, and I didn't know what he was thinking. I do now. He said, fine, maybe he can do more. And then they'd go out to the entrance, the lobby, and he'd push some English magazines on. He said, now you've got to learn about other kinds of cars. Very valuable, because at that time, all I knew was what you saw in some of the magazines with California hot rods. And yeah, really, he took the time, which is very unusual. And then one day, in the bottom of this hot basement, I put all this together and I said, I'm going to do industrial design, transportation. And now the search was on. So I went to University of Wisconsin Extension and I assembled a course. Yes, in industrial design. And the high spot of that was Mr. Baldwin, who was a lettering instructor, and I tolerated that because he drove a Pierce Arrow. And he used to come in, he must have been 70 years old, and very, very dignified looking man, but he'd have a glint in his eye the mornings that he'd come in when he had taken an Olds 98 or 88 at a stop sign. This is 1936 Pierce, a two-door sedan, which is a very strange-looking thing, but it went like hell. And this is so out of context for him, because whenever he would do some lettering or demonstrate, his right hand would constantly shake with palsy. But when that brush touched the paper, it was still as could be in beautiful strokes. And when he finished that stroke, he came all apart again. But I couldn't imagine him racing out there, drag racing with a vehicle like that. Anyway, that was a high point. After about a year of that, I saw no direction in the course. And I'd heard about Art Center, and I didn't know anything about it. The people in the universities didn't know anything about it. It's another art school, that sort of thing. I told my parents that I'd made up my mind I was going to go to art school, art center. No, it's not accredited, but where else do you learn about automobile design? That's really what I want to go into. And luckily, my dad was understanding, my mother also, and I had saved up some money. I had had a 36 Ford when I bought it. It was repainted and overbored, so when I did one more bore on it, it lasted, oh, I would say 5,000 miles, and it literally blew itself to smithereens because it was fast.
You were boring.
It was overboard, and so I parked the vehicle and I asked my dad if he could sell it and send me the proceeds, and I took my money and my two Milwaukee friends, two German friends, one had a 37 Ford, it was a convertible with a rumble seat, and the three of us, all three across, drove to California. They were on a lark. They wanted a vacation, and I wanted to get into school, and that's how it all started. And driving to California was, again, for me, the second big awakening, because there were things out there that I'd never seen, and the attitude and the vehicles.
And the cross-country trip must have been.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. It was, we boiled out several times. We
36 Ford.
Vapor locks. It was a 37 Ford.
37 Ford, yeah. That lovely one with
the
radiator. Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah, really beautiful. It looked like a roadster, only had wind-up windows. Uh-huh. Very, very rakish little thing with a rumble seat. Rumble seat was full of clothes.
How had you heard of the Art Center School? Had Stevens recommended
it? No, I picked up on that. I can't remember how I really found out. I either was a tiny advertisement, mm-hmm, or word of mouth, through some strange
the
University of Wisconsin had not even heard of the school. Nothing. There was nothing there. Well, it wasn't an accredited college, so, you know, at that time,
yeah.
So there was nothing to guide in on. But that was when Art Center School was down on 3rd Street.
And
that was great, because suddenly I was packed in with a group of people who were interested in the same things that I was. And that was very unusual, because I hadn't, you know, outside of my buddies in Milwaukee, mm-hmm, but we kicked tires and shined cars, in our spare time, did some model airplane work, but there wasn't the intensity, no feeling to get into this thing.
Had you written ahead?
Yes, oh yeah. I had to submit a portfolio.
Oh, you did, okay.
And I was accepted, and
oh,
that
fine.
That probably leveraged my dad to say, well, there's something there.
Okay.
And
so you finally got to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
What were your impressions when you got there?
Well, a little... filled with apprehension because Arts Center instills a fear, or did instill a fear in you, because the attrition rate was so high. So you'd have to make up your mind, well, no matter what this costs in time, I'm going to go through with it. And of course, we were forced to have instructors like Fleury, who was a magnificent...
Spell his name.
F-L-U-E-R-Y, I believe. Fleury was tall, thin, gaunt, and evil-looking.
What did he teach?
He taught design, just pure design, and to relate to from fender shapes to pure design was very difficult at first because his first you have one day classes there, and his first day he said, "Now I want you to sit down, little guys." Always put everybody down. He says, first of all, I want to know how many guys here are into transportation design, car design. And I beamed, and several of my fellow friends beamed. They raised their hands. He says, now let's get it straight, guys. We're not here to draw chrome turds on wheels. We're here to learn design. So I said, holy shit, here we go. And I'll never forget the frustration of that first design project because he said, okay, now, little guys, I want you to cut out a blackboard, and gave us the dimensions, and then he said, I want you to cut out some red dots about a half an inch diameter, and then some orange dots and some blue dots. And after this had taken place, you know, about 45 minutes into the day, he said, I want you to arrange those on paper, and now I want you to come back next week. And the hollow feeling of, what am I getting into? What am I doing? What should I do? Came on. Of course, the next day he told us. Oh, the next day he told us what we'd done wrong, and that was a start. But I still remember that the arrangement of one unit to another always meant something.
Did you put it into a conscious shape or was it just
No, it was just pure design relationships of forms or pieces. The other great awakening was Strother McMinn, because Strother. Strother was mainline. The other things were peripheral, but Strother was mainline. Whenever you wanted to get together and talk about what you were there for, cars, he was there and he knew it. And everybody there had the greatest respect because he not only knew the latest that happened in design, but all the history of what happened to design and coach builders, and he had contact with the industry where we all wanted to end up.
Sure.
But he's one of the very few who could really articulate a vehicle design in terms of one form relative to another. His datum line theory, where you could balance the units of design upper and lower, the relationship of proportion, sensitivity of line and shape, got into lofting like in shipbuilding. And so he formed for me the basis of industrial design expertise.
Mm-hmm. He's really an exemplar for the school,
isn't he? Oh, he's really fast. And he's still going strong. We really was there last week, and he got a new class together to kick off design from a marketing point of view, and he invited the dealers in and let them expound with us in a final crit, which was really healthy because the students suddenly realized that they had to design something for the marketplace, not just for himself.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very good insight. Strother's also, whatever I ever learned or could put into use in the automotive industry, Strother is probably 100 miles ahead of everyone else because of his experience and his ability to see through a design and to break it down into understandable units. He's really, really very proficient. Yeah. Well, the school was very unique in that I'd been to University of Wisconsin Extension, and there were it was cardboard walls with holes drilled in so people could look in and see the nudes as they're being sketched and painted, and life drawing classes. And at our center, this is this kind of a strange-looking piece of architecture, constantly bathed in sunlight, and you'd work inside the classroom, but you could step out and just get sun and recharge yourself and run back in, and you were always surrounded by enthusiasts.
And it wasn't Milwaukee.
No, it sure wasn't Milwaukee. There's something else here. We didn't have a hell of a lot of time for social life. We'd take off once in a while on a weekend and take some homework with us if we could. It was something that's portable. And go to the beach and just kind of sit and talk and talk about the future, about the industry, or the latest victories that Ferrari had accomplished in the races overseas. And then, of course, we went to the Palm Springs road races, and we gained entrance by painting the numbers on the cars. We went to Torrey Pines, and we brought our sleeping bags, and in order not to pay, we'd get there. We'd drive Friday night, and we'd get within the confines of the circuit and sleep on a beach in blankets.
Torrey Pines, was that a racing stop?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was down here near San Diego, and then it was Golden Gate Park. They raced in a park too, so we went up there and watched Phil Hill.
Or was it around Los Angeles?
No, it's near San Francisco.
Right. Mm-hmm. Golden Gate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Phil Hill was racing up there in those
days. Oh yeah, that was, and we got to be friends with Phil Hill in the old days. He was always an inspiration to us because he would be the direct contact to this wonderful automotive sculpture, the Ferrari. And we invited him to school, and Strother held seminars with him, so he explained what things were all about in the racing end of it. Mm-hmm. And of course, he wasn't the real professional then. He was racing for the fun club racing, and of course, we were very proud that he was kind of on our team. He was at Art Center, and then he went on to greatness, world championship. We did an awful lot of work in those days. You would get a class assignment, you'd work all day on it, and then you'd work all night on it. Mm-hmm. It just went on and on, and usually the weekends. There was burnout by some people. They had to take a semester off. But there was that intensity, and there was always a light at the end of the tunnel, because at that time you knew that if you graduated, and there was a great attrition rate at Art Center, but you knew if you graduated and had a reasonable portfolio, you were virtually guaranteed of a job in Detroit. Mm. I was lucky enough to get a Ford's General Motors scholarship. I think it was the third semester, and that really helped because...
Well, that worked. Was it offered by the company through the school?
Yes,
students?
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you had to perform some duties for that, like clean up the shop, but that was very simple. Mm-hmm. And it was a real honor to do that. And I don't know if you recall, at the time when I graduated in 53, Ford's product was a hell of a lot sexier than General Motors' product. And the students gravitate towards where the real good-looking cars are. That's who they want to work for. They want to work for management that can put that kind of thing out. And I had this crazy moralistic attitude, well, if GM paid my way, I really ought to go to GM. It's the best decision I ever made in my life outside of marrying Ellie. But there were a lot of, we had discussions of where was the best place to work. It's interesting that in the fallout here, you have a lot of people who absolutely did not want to work with a large corporation. They wanted to work with small ones. Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand that. They couldn't understand why I wanted to work for a large one, but it happened that way.
When you were in the student, were you able to have a car while you were here?
Later on, I traveled so hard out there. My dad did help me, and I got a 48 Ford, mm-hmm. and it allowed us some mobility, and people would chip in gas and everything else. Okay. Later on, when towards the seventh semester, I took on a job to help out. I worked a gas station in a rough neighborhood where the owner of the gas station wanted to find out how many batteries and flat tires I had fixed the night before. And the first few nights I said, none. And he says, well, let me show you how to do that. And he went out in a parking lot in the back, and there were some apartments there where people parked their cars. He let the air out of the tires and left the lights on.
How'd you find out?
And I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. So he and I didn't get along real well, but eventually I landed some contracts for some art and design work, and I started continuing then. And at that time, I found a way to wholesale and get a good price for the Ford, and I got into a TDMG before graduation. Now, I was working like...
TD stands for?
MG.
What do you mean by TD?
Well, it's a series that came after the TC, the classic one.
Fine.
And, and at that time, the
TD... What year was that? What year was the MG?
1952.
Good.
And it was looked down on because the purists didn't like that car because it had independent front suspension and smaller wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good time to wheel and deal, and I got into that.
It's perfect for you.
Yeah. Now, it was a little heavy on me because I was trying to do a good job at school, and I found myself with a dependent, that car. It was new, but it's still a dependent. And
when you go to Art Center, do they have accommodations? You have to find your neighborhood?
You have to find your own.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's... Oh, they have placements, but it was very difficult because you'd have to live in a private home.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, four or five of us got together and we rented a place. And you know,
as you approach your senior year.
Right.
Yeah.
The recollections of Art Center are all positive. It was a real opening to the automotive world. And the beauty of it was that they taught fine arts, they taught advertising design, photography, so you could rub shoulders with all these other allied arts, and you learned from that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my best friends, Rolofson, was in a photography class, and R-O-L-O-F-S-O-N, I think. And that led to another thing. His term project was a magazine article.
Would you do a project each term?
No.
Or only for your senior term?
No, we did projects every term.
You know, but,
yeah, yeah, but his, in photography, they had to have some kind of major published work.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided that he'd put together an article and get it published on an automobile designer.
Mm-hmm.
It said, the copy, the byline said, automobile designers are made, not born. And he chose me as a subject matter. And we were both graduating at the same time, so he took a lot of shots of me graduating. And the magazine hit the newsstand the day I walked into Detroit. And it was a little, a little pushy, I felt, because everybody recognized me. And
what was the name of the
magazine? Auto Sportsman. It only lasted 6 months. It was a large magazine. I keep getting copies from friends. They find them and, hey, remember this? And in it, it was interesting because I think that probably a lot of people raise their eyebrows a little because in it, there's a shot of me in my blue jeans, my brush cut over my clay model term project. And right next to me, looking at the model and myself, intimidating me because he sat much higher, was Harley Earl.
Oh my God.
He interviewed me at college, and that's...
He used to come out to interview
Yeah,
me,
he
right?
did. And I got hired through him, which
now,
is...
Now, that particular episode, could you sort of describe it?
Harley Earl was visiting the school, and then he wanted to go into the back room upstairs with the old wooden floors with clay in between the cracks, you know, and he wanted to see what was going. And Harley Earl had to dip his head every time he walked through a doorway. He was big and imposing.
6'6" or something like
that. Oh, it's huge, yes. Big hands.
Mm-hmm.
And
must have been quite a sight for you.
Well, yeah, we were told. Well, we'd had other chief designers come through. One semester we had let's see, who do we have? We have Ed Glowacki, who was head of Cadillac Studio.
G-L-O-W-A-C-K-E.
Mm-hmm. And
he's head of Chevrolet.
Cadillac.
Cadillac, yes.
And let's see, we had all the chiefs. I even forget their chief designers. All five chief designers came out at Art Center, and we fielded questions with them. But here was Harley Earl this semester, and we were all told to be by our models in case he wanted to ask some questions. So he came over and he looked at my model, and he said, he had a curious way of speaking. He said, hello. And I said, hello, Mr. Earl. And he says, what's your name, fella? And I said, my name is Hank Hager. What are you doing there? I said, well, I'm making this model and describe what it meant and what it was. It was a sports car, two-passenger, and he was, Harley Earl was huge, and I just felt, my God, looking up at him, you know, and his eyes were slightly red. I think it was bright out in the sunlight, you know, and piercing blue behind that. And he, Harley, decided that he'd sit down and chat a while.
Well, that's good.
Unusual, perhaps. Yes, but just the act of sitting down, because when he sat down, it was like folding a grasshopper into a chair, you know, and after he sat down...
For a few minutes.
Right. It was more like that. A little more evil.
Yeah.
And he kind of... I was still standing, and he looked me straight in the eye, and he was seated. It was very intimidating. And I remember him saying, gee, that's pretty nice. Now, back in Detroit, we do it a little different, though. And I thought, oh, I blew the whole thing, you know, and I felt, I guess it really was the wrong decision to do this kind of vehicle, etc. Well, he was just explaining that, as we all know now, that when you go to school, you learn all the crafts, all the tools. When you go into industry, then you learn your profession. And he was, in his way, that was what he was explaining. So, eventually I was hired and went back there. And
How did they indicate that you were hired?
It was a phone call, as I remember, and it came through the school and asked to report on a certain day, and I did. It was really exciting, and that, of course, that was at the old building
on Third Street in Los Angeles.
Right.
No, did they move?
Yeah. That was 10 years ago now. They've only been out there 10 years, right?
Did they have an interim stop between Third Street?
No, they went directly there. Right. And then when I went to Detroit, that's another thing, too.
Oh, yeah, how'd you get there?
Well, I drove back to Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Took as much as I could. I didn't have a lot, so portfolio and everything. And headed back there, stopped at my parents' house, and then reported to work. And, of course, that was also in the old building, downtown Detroit.
Still there?
Yes.
Tech Center hadn't been built?
No. Oh. No, it was in process. Saarinen was working on it. And
have you been to Detroit before when you were in Milwaukee?
No.
Have you ever got that part?
No.
What kind of impression did you have driving?
It was like another Milwaukee.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
But Milwaukee was also always a friendlier, smaller town.
Yeah, it is.
Atmosphere.
I've noticed that. That's the most interesting one. It's still a small town.
Yeah, it's
very friendly.
Kind of provincial in a way.
Oh,
and,
that's part of it.
It has more of a friendly ethnic flavor to it that I can't quite find in other cities.
I was quite taken with when I was there.
Yeah.
But Detroit is a blue collar town, period.
Yeah.
In those days. Yeah.
I remember going, being assigned, checked in, and then assigned to an advanced area.
Where was that?
Everybody came, that was down in Milwaukee Street, I guess. Yes, it was an old car warehouse.
Was it?
No air conditioning, and it was dirty. You know, if you left the windows open overnight, your drawings would be black in the morning.
Well, that's soft cold, these
Bill Lang L-A-N-G, was running the studio then.
The Event Studio.
And it was called Orientation Studio.
Yeah, for new recruits.
Yeah. And Joe Rayback, a great big tech stylist or senior draftsman, was his assistant. And he was a, H-R-A-B-A-K, I believe. A real big tough guy, and he'd big arms, and as a joke sometimes he'd whap a sweep down on your desk, you know, or, and Bill Lang was lighting firecrackers and setting them around, so it was one of those places, you're extremely defensive, but the place was alive. And then one day we had another man.
Excuse me, were the number of...
There must have been 30 people in there.
Any of your students from...
No, I guess I was the only one that went out. It was a very small class.
That sounds like you were fairly close to tough then, because now they take the tough people.
Well, we try to take the best we can. We really try to hold out. But at that time, there's a policy of hiring as many people as you could from different areas. Mm-hmm. Pratt was a very strong school. Mm-hmm. Cleveland. There was no really superior school at that time. General Motors and the industry really wanted students or graduates because there's so much work to do, so many jobs to fill. And we also had from Pratt Institute, the head of their school, head of their industrial design school, Mr. Costello, a very respected instructor in industrial design. K-O-S-T-E-L-O-W. And we're all sitting at our desks working. I remember this particular day, my friend Stan Weilen, who's a designer back there, Weilen, W-I-L-E-N, who is from Pratt. And this was his God-like instructor. Would every day go over to Stan's desk and give him some guidance. And then one day, Costello walked past my desk, and I was working on this rendering, which I thought was a good design, a good rendering. It was half finished.
These were in the abstract, more or less.
Yes. Yeah. And he was standing behind me in a professorial attitude and stroking his chin. And then I turned around and looked at him. He said, you from Art Center. And he walked away. The greatest put down I've ever been through, you know me. And I thought,
those upstarts on the West
Coast,
huh?
This thing is political, I said. But it was a happy time.
Was it a technique that was inculcated into you there that was recognizable by other designers?
Well, I think Art Center has always had a reputation for being glossy and perhaps involved more in presentation than design content. And it was his little way to jab just a little, you know.
Okay.
So,
right.
So, but I worked there 6 months, and then I was...
In the Event Studio?
Well, 3 months in advance, and then I was assigned to Cadillac Studio.
Oh, really?
Ed Glowacki, and, that was on the top 14th floor, I believe it was.
That was the
GM building.
I mean, that was the top of the hierarchy.
Well, yeah, I remember Ed Glowacki, when I was brought into the studio, sat me down on a long bench at a desk, fresh desk there, you know, with fresh paper on it, and he said, well, I'd like you to meet the team, Hank, and then I want to say how much I enjoy having you here. Hank, how does it feel to be one of the princes? And I thought, oh my God, this is getting heavy, you know. First Costello, now Glowacki, and they're kind of, the world is getting to be a mock-up. So, but he, his intent, of course, was to elevate the quality of Cadillac design to the point of arrogance, to put it a cut above, and he pushed very hard, and he did a hell of a good job at it.
Mm-hmm. So what year is this?
This is 1953, late.
Right.
And I survived for 3 months. So I was back in Detroit, a total of 6, and I was drafted.
Oh, no.
Korean War. Yeah, it was right after that. I was lucky. So.
They still kept drafting.
Oh, yeah, they kept the draft up.
Years.
Yeah. So I was in there for 2 years.
Oh, my. Where's the station?
Well, all the way to Fort Leonard Wood, and then I got transferred to Fort Belvoir, Virginia, and Fort Sheridan, and back again to Fort Leonard Wood. Mm-hmm. It seems that they found out that I was doing car design. So they went down the list, and the closest they could find was heavy-duty Caterpillar repair. Well, for some reason, I had a hell of an allergy problem, and I remember being in a dusty bowl in Fort Belvoir, lifting this giant hood of a D8, getting into the engine, and my allergies are so bad, they gave me some pills for it, and made me dizzy, and I fell off of the thing, and I had put the whole hood on top of me.
Oh my God.
So about that time, they solved the problem. They put me on smaller Caterpillars.
So,
right. Eventually, when I was back at Fort Leonard Wood, I found that there was a training aide, and I submitted a portfolio to them, and I spent the rest of my life in the Army with training aides, which was a lot better.
Good
discipline. Oh, yeah. When I got back, I went through all the other studios again. You know,
you. What did they welcome you back?
Oh, sure. In fact, they. In fact, oh yes, I found out I could get out of the Army a semester early or a few months early if I wanted to continue my education. So I wrote Art Center and GM, and I said, would you mind if I got a refresher? Because, you know, and I'll pay for it, you know. Fine. So I did that, and then one day before the semester was over, GM wrote me a letter and said, you are overdue. If you don't get here by a certain date, your time in grade here from 53 will revert to when you do come. So, you know, we'd like to have you back. So I'm going back again.
But there was his soldier MG by that stuff.
I did. Yeah, I kept the MG through the Army.
Did you?
And I literally drove the wheels off of it. And when I went back to Art Center, I drove back. My parents had then moved to Burbank, California. And I just pulled up. I drove cross country with one stop, I think, from it was a great, just to get out of the Army, you know.
Oh, yes.
Put the top down. I just drove across country.
Right.
I remember the car stopped right near the Painted Desert someplace at dusk with heavy trucks going back and forth on a two-lane road. That damned electric fuel pump point, the points had disappeared because of, I think, had about 50, 60,000 miles on it. So I get under the car with a flashlight and file it very delicately, put it back together again, and continue. But the rods are going and everything is going. So an MG dealer was just starting out down the road in Burbank. And and he had a TF, brand new one, 1500, the big engine. And I traded this one in as is, and I got a very good deal for it. And then I was doing more technical illustration on the side too then.
Mm-hmm.
So I was getting, I was doing the habit again. The car habit was with me, so
yeah,
I had to do that. Eventually, when I finished school, the payments weren't right, and I had to do something. So I sold the car in California. And then I flew to Michigan, picked up my job, got a real GM car, and continued my career.
So you were back, and they're welcoming you back. What's your first assignment?
Well, I had a brief stay in an orientation studio again. They want to see where you are and what you can do. And then I got.
By this time, you're out at the tech center.
Yes, yeah. Right. You moved in there. That was inspiring.
That was exciting.
My
first
God.
Saw that.
Right. That was exciting.
Were you first drawing right at Mount Road, I guess.
Well, yeah, I suddenly turning in the gate, I had to take a taxi in, and when I got there, I couldn't believe what I'd seen, you know, and I had friends, so they fixed me up with a room and kind of hoofed it, so to speak, winged
right.
it. And
there's this incredible lake.
Oh, it was just beautiful.
Rotunda.
All fresh and new.
Right.
And
yeah.
It was, especially the way we had to work in the old building. In Cadillac Studio, when we had to do a limousine, there was a pillar right in the middle of the platform on one side.
Yeah.
So if you want to do an alternate proposal, you'd kind of work it through there. One man could fit between a pillar and a vehicle, and you'd have to kind of look like this around it. Strange. And here was a wide open spaces, huge studios, well lit, and the grounds to walk on outside is just beautiful.
What were the Cadillac? Can you give us a little thumbnail sketch of it? He used to talk to
Yeah, Ed Glowacki was very intense. As I said before, he really wanted to elevate the quality of Cadillac design, and he would have extreme attention to detail. He's also a very, very big car nut. He raced Corvettes, and he's a very hard driver. He would love to have somebody challenge him, because if there was a policeman or anybody inside, he'd just floor it and go. You know, he just would not take second. And he ran at work the same way. He went like hell. He really put effort into it. Mm. Unfortunately, he was cut down by, I think it was cancer in the middle of his career. Yeah, it was just too bad.
So your first assignment
was Chevrolet Studio. And that
you
was
changing.
Yeah, right. And now that was at that point I said, boy, am I glad I didn't go with Ford. Because we were preparing the launch of the 55 Chevrolet then, and that had the new Chevy V8, which had the very light alloy pressed rockers, so it was a light valve train. The car went like hell, 327 engines. The cars didn't have wall-to-wall grille, they had a smaller mouth like a Ferrari. They were doing the latest versions of the Corvettes, which are really nice looking.
Did that come out in 53?
First one came out in 53, but the really nice ones came out in 56 and 7.
Right.
And so when I got there in 55, they were done right in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And
right,
yeah, it was quite a nice time.
Great satisfaction.
Yeah. And then I served time in that studio, and the next
one. Who's the studio head?
Claire McKeegan. MacKeegan.
His first name is?
Claire. Clare. Or.
That's right.
Yeah, we call him Mac.
Mac, right. What kind of a taskmaster was he?
He's very good. He's he had a kind of a tight-lipped sense of humor, and but very aggressive, and he would spend a lot of time on the boards checking the engineering too. You never quite knew what was happening, because don't forget, they were under the pressures of Harley Earl in that time. Harley would generally just talk to the studio chief. So he was a filter, and he had to make this work. And at that time, the studios were expanding. They'd moved into their new environment, and these studios were huge, and they were building staff. And the auto industry was changing, very competitive at that time, from the 55, 56, 57 Chevys. The new line of Chryslers are coming out with the large tail fins in 57, I believe. So there's a lot of activity, some new things happening. Well, I stayed in Chevrolet Studio, and I forget how long. But
you remember any particular models that stand up in your mind that you worked on, that you
upper? Oh, we worked on a 57 Chevrolets, 58s.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one time, there was a group of about six or seven of us that were pulled out of the studios, and they wanted us to do some advanced work.
Mm-hmm.
And we were to make up our own designs.
Mm-hmm.
Now that lasted for about a year. That was completely management someplace.
Yeah.
Then I was part of another team of about four or five designers, and we were transferred from studio to studio. I think in 1 year I made about eight or nine moves.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was we'd go where the pressure was,
right,
and would do variations with a fresh look.
I see.
And that was interesting, but yeah, it was good, but it was tough on us because everybody else resented us.
Sure.
And then, of course, the pressure was always on us to keep producing, and that can wear you down.
Mm-hmm.
And we served at different studios, Buick Studio, Wild Holes, all around the world.
Experiences in that quick tour or so of the studio?
God, there were so many. I remember once in Buick, and this was later on, Harley Earl came in. This was after Chrysler's clean line with the fins, and the issue here was a new Buick, and it was a 58. 59 was being formed, but you still had to live through the 58, and you had the old body style, which was rather bulbous and heavy and not fleet like the Chryslers.
Right.
And I remember Harley coming in and saying, now guys, I want you to do a sweep spear, and I want you to do some hoop scoops, bubble bombs, Dagmars, portholes, and rockers, and chrome wheels, and I want you to do all those, and then I'll be back, and then we'll decide what we're going to do. And then he left. Clip, clop, clip, clop, clip, with these huge wingtips, you know. Immaculately dressed, clip, clop. You could always hear his pace. Clip, clop, clip, clop. And everybody'd freeze.
Slow measured.
Right.
Yeah.
Came back the next day, and he says, Jesus Christ, fellas, you didn't hear me. You just got a sweep. Where's all the other paraphernalia? And of course, it was hanging on the boards all over. He says, now, why don't you do what I say? Pull it all on. So we put every kind of chrome piece we could on that side view rendering. And he says, there, guys, now you got it. Clip, clap, clip, he walked out. And we all looked at each other. He's serious. This is it. This is it. Go to press. And if you remember the 58 Buick, it had everything on it. Well, he was, he never explained his merchandising philosophy. He didn't have to. He dealt with the top brass, you know. We were just his servants. So, yeah, right. And... I guess, who knows if it helped the sales, or I guess it might have, because there was enough dash and glamour on it.
Yeah. Dagmars.
Yeah, Dagmars. Yes, right. All kinds of, you know, everything. Ever just loaded up, put ornaments.
Yeah. That's fascinating. So you're getting seasoning as a troubleshooter, really?
Well, at one point, yeah. And then one day, this is later in 1960. I'd served as an assistant chief designer in several studios, but I really got a chance when, this is when Mitchell was running the place.
Earl had retired in 58? 59,
someplace in there.
Mitchell was his heir apparent.
Yes.
Right. Was there there was no other claimant to the throne? Whatever.
No, there may have been people who thought that they had a chance at it, but Bill was clear and above the... the aggressor, and Harley Earl had put him aside for, I think, a period of time, a year perhaps, to run his industrial design business on the outside.
Very odd situation.
Yeah.
He got an okay from the higher ups to do that.
Right, as long as he had nothing that was competitive. But he brought, evidently the idea was to season Bill and get him on his own to run a company and see the business end of it. And then he brought him back, and he popped right in there. And Bill is wonderful, because he was, with Harley Earl, it was intimidation. I mean, Jesus Christ, you here today or you're gone tomorrow? There's a lot of that. I remember one day in McKeegan's studio in Chevy, that was amazing. I was out of the studio and I came back in and I went to my desk and somebody said, hey, Jesus Christ, don't sit at your desk now. I said, why? He says, don't look towards Mac's office. So I didn't, but I looked up anyway, and I saw the curtain part like this, and there's Harley Earl sitting in a Bertoia chair with his legs, kneecaps way up, and he'd look out and he'd point, and the curtain would close, and Mac would have to go out and talk to somebody, and the guy was gone. So somebody says, hey, you know, we got a real problem with the design here. We better get up on a board and work it. So I grabbed a sweep and went up and helped. I'll be damned if they didn't clean the whole studio. There's only two of us left.
And so,
well, he didn't like the design was going, and he wanted to fix the design, and Mac had to qualify everybody that was working on something. So it was design by fear, you know. I mean, you really worried. Now, with Mitchell, was something else. Mitchell was inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
He could chew your ass out,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, just, I won't say, just put you down, or sometimes he'd get so mad at a car, he'd come up to it, and he'd kick it, the clay model. He kicked in a clay model fender once, and Irv Urbicki remembers walking down the hall one day with Bill, who was limping, and says, "Gee, I don't know what's wrong with my leg. It's really been hurting lately." He says, "I can tell you what's wrong with it." He says, "What?" He says, "Remember the other day you kicked in that clay mile?" He says, "No shit, did I kick it that hard?" But, you know, but Bill had a facility for saying, "I'd like that design to go that way and do this and do that." And perhaps by intimidation through Harley Earl's reign, and also by Bill, who is a very aggressive guy, you had better do it right then. You didn't wait. Because Bill was really good. He'd go out the door, as Harley did, and he might suddenly come around back in and look 3 minutes later, and if you weren't doing it, all hell would break loose. The only difference between Harley Earl and Bill, when Bill walked out of the room and chewed somebody out, he'd come back 5 minutes later and toss out a little joke. He'd made his point, but he didn't want it to last. And that was very clever. I don't know if it might have been his way, or maybe his conscience, or his sensitivity to people, because Bill really is very, very sensitive to people. He doesn't like to display that. But he had a good facility for leading in that manner, which I thought was pretty neat. In 63,
Excuse me, what were Bill's strengths beyond that? Can you profile him a bit? He's turned into one of the legendary figures.
Yeah, Bill has been criticized lately for his commercialism or his approach to car design. But you see, the industry's changed and the market's changed. He was absolutely perfect for GM during his tenure. In 63, I took over the Corvette, Camaro, Chevy 2, Corvair production studios, called Chevy 2 then. And in developing those cars with him, he had a facility for predicting where you should go with something. A good case in point, I think, would be the 70.5 Camaro, which was really what we considered the good one, because it was a fresh sheet of paper. You could put the cowl down, you could do whatever you wanted within engineering reason, but you weren't stuck with a Chevy 2 cowl and trying to make a sports car out of it like the 67, 68, 69 Camaros. The theme at that time by Chrysler and Dodge Charger and Camaro was to have a wide loop grill, like a jet air intake with egg crate in it. And so designers would automatically gravitate towards putting this kind of front end on an all-new body. Well, it didn't reach far enough for Bill, so when he came back from an overseas show, he brought some pictures and said, now look at this Jaguar. Look what they did. They didn't put wall-to-wall egg crate. He says, damn it, they use sheet metal. And they put fenders back on, because people were trying to get rid of fenders. He says, you put fenders back on, and they put a catwalk between a fender and a grill, and they put lights in there.
He loved that.
Yeah. And as we worked with that and applied that from the Jaguar direction to the Camaro, we evolved a whole new front end. And I got to credit Bill with giving the inspiration to go far enough on that. When we did a beautiful front end without a bar in it, without a bumper, and of course that's the way the car was meant to be, and the Vision said, well, we're Chevrolet, we can't afford that. So then we came back and designed it again with a bar through the grill, and that was our base front end. And the marketing people agreed that they could charge extra money for this urethane, which is a new material then, and a vertical dog bone bumper bar in the center, and that became the RS grill. So we kind of backed into that one, but it was only on kind of Bill's inspiration to, you know, light the wick and go far enough.
That's good.
He did the same with Corvettes also. He was very, very, very insistent on what a Corvette should do. That's why I kept Larry Shinoda doing the advanced Corvettes, the Mako Sharks. And then when I was running the production studio, we took the essentials of that design and applied it, and then went on from there.
I led you a little too far along. Let's move you back to, you survived the Harley Earl era with a certain amount of aplomb and distinction, at least. least you're still there.
Yeah, I'm still there. If you lasted, you're okay.
You're okay.
Yeah, right.
And you're surviving Claire McKeegan, his administration, the Chevrolet Studio. What comes up next? How did the next move happen?
I don't really recall it. After Chevrolet, I was in and out of Chevrolet several times. Designers were moved around a lot more in those days,
yeah.
And they got a lot of experience with large cars, small cars.
Mm-hmm. Interiors, exterior.
Yeah, we had a Studio X at one time, which was off on a side. Bob Cumberford was in there, Tony Lapine, who's now head of Porsche, Lapine.
Cumberford.
Yeah, Cumberford, Cumberford.
Mm-hmm.
They're both practicing designers. Tony's been head of Porsche now for, I think, 15 years. I don't know, but I've seen him at the auto shows. I think he has his own company, and he designed a Cumberford vehicle, which is an aluminum chassis cast vehicle with wood laminate fenders, which is very different. Very different vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And those Studio X projects were special vehicles, future Corvettes. There was an awful lot of movement. We worked on SS Sebring Corvettes, special model Corvettes, show cars. We did a Chevy 2 show car. We did, on a 70.5 Camaro, we did a special, what we call a cam-back station wagon, fiberglass model. It was, we were in Buick for a while. 1960, I think, 59, 60, working on 61s. Bernie Smith was studio head then, SMITH. There's so much that happened. I would have to refer to my files someplace and go through that for a whole day to see where I was at any given time.
Fantastic kaleidoscoping.
It was exciting as hell.
Yes.
It was never a dull day.
Mm-hmm. Now, where are you living at this time? Move out near
the tech center, or? Yeah, in 1957, I married Ellie.
What was her maiden name?
Petruska, Polish.
Eleanor Petruska.
Petruska, P-I-E-T-R-U-S-K-A.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, the way I met her was on one of my trips from Art Center back to the Midwest during a break.
Mm-hmm.
Put an ad on a bulletin board, and two gentlemen who were in the advertising area. Bob Monks and Bill Pierce answered. And we were going to take my old Ford cross country, nonstop. We did. They got off in Chicago.